Hello everyone and welcome to episode number 73 of the Peer Geek Podcast, and it's an absolute pleasure to have you here. Now in this final episode for 2016, we're going to be diving into the results of the recent Tech and Phys Ed survey which we completed as part of the website. Now this is something that we've done before, and we basically get a snapshot of the different things that people are doing with technology, things they value with technology in their practice, but we also get to find out some of the common challenges and issues that are faced around the globe. Now, we at the website get the chance to use this information to write better content. If you're having issues with certain things, then you can bet that that's the sort of stuff that we'll be writing about next year. But you as a listener get a chance to sort of see where everyone else is, and in many cases, you can use this data to help potentially advocate for some of the things that you're potentially asking for as your school. Now, the last time we ran this in 2014, we had a lot of people who emailed us and said that in the following year, this data was useful to them to showcase to their administration just where they were trying to get things happening in their practice. And the data was sort of a backing point for that to say, well, this is what other schools have. Let's try and, you know, do the same thing. So we're going to do that again. I'm also going to link back to some of the previous results from the previous survey so that we can see how things have changed. Now, not all areas have changed, but in some of them, they're a little bit of a sort of picture of how things are progressing. And I want to sort of dive into what I believe to be the sort of trends that are coming from that. So let's dive into the results. Now, the first thing I want to mention, obviously, is that this is not a scientific-based study. We've posed a series of questions. Many of them are questions that I see coming up a lot and trends that I see coming along. And I want to just get some data around those. Now, there's no way to sort of identify where all the people are responding from and the implications of different countries on the data. But this is a snapshot of the people who are interested in responding, and it comes from a truly global perspective. Now, we had around 800 people respond to the survey, which is up around about 30% from the previous year or the previous time that we ran the event. And the first thing that was immediately apparent to me is we had exactly the same amount of female to male responses. Now, we've got 51% of people who responded as females and 49% of people who responded were males. Now, that's exactly the same as 2 years ago when we had around about, you know, a third less people respond to the survey, which I think is quite interesting. Now, in terms of the age ranges of the people who are involved in completing this activity, we have 30 to 35 age group as being the most popular. In fact, almost with an identical draw in the 40 to 45 bracket. Each of those had 17% of the votes. The next category was the 16% bracket, which had 35 to 40 age range. So you can see here that most of the people responding to this survey fit within 30 to 40 years of age. Now, compare that to the previous time that we ran this survey, and the number one category was the 40 to 45 bracket. Again, the 35 to 40 was second, and the 30 to 35 range was the next chunk. So this sort of really does indicate to me that that is the common theme. You know, most of the people who are looking at using tech are within the 30 to 45 bracket based on our data. And in this year, you know, if you look down to the 23 to 25 range, which we would assume to be the technology-minded group, they only account for 4% of the data. And again, the 26 to 30% age bracket, that's 10%. The 55 plus are 11%. And the 50 to 55 group is 13%. So this perception that you have to be young to use tech is really not being showcased inside of this survey here. And it really does scream to this notion that I say a lot, that I don't believe digital natives exist, and I think good teaching practice is the key to all of this stuff happening. And if you look at the data, they're people who've been around in the teaching profession probably a bit longer, and as a result, they've got better crafted skills potentially, and as therefore can start to look at how these things might be implemented. Now, if we move on to the next question, we asked, what year levels do you teach PE in? No surprising, our number one group this year is the elementary and primary aged group with 52% of the audience. If we look at the next in line was the high school students with 40% of the audience. And then because you could select more than one, the data doesn't match up to 100 because you could select more than one of the responses. But middle school, we had 34%. We had kinder, 24% of our kinder age students were represented in this study, and then 2% for university. Now, this is exactly the same order that we had last time inside of the survey, albeit with high school and elementary flipped. So last time we ran it, the high school secondary was the top spot and elementary was second, but now we've seen that change to elementary being, you know, much, much further ahead in terms of the number of people who responded to this survey around technology and phys ed. So that's quite interesting. And it sort of speaks to a lot of the stuff that I notice with people emailing me. They always seem to be from some of the younger year levels. Now, this is where we dive into the tech-based question. So this question was, what devices and technology do your students potentially have access to? Now, that word is pretty important because I wanted to sort of make sure that it's student use and not just teacher use. You know, if you're talking about your own device, maybe they don't potentially have access to that. So the student use is the real focus here. And for me, it's still no surprise. iPad and the iPod in 2016 had 58% of the responses, which is quite massive, really. It's, you know, it's contrasting that across all of the other device types. It still seems to be quite the go-to device for a phys ed audience, and I would say probably because of the fact of its portability. The second most accessible device was mobile phones, and that's up from the previous time where it wasn't in the top perspective or the top range. Now, in terms of actual percentages of compared to the rest of the data, it's actually, we've seen a drop. So in 2014, 69% of the people who responded had access to iPads and iPods as their potential tool that students could use. And this time around, the data is 58%. So what's probably started to happen, and you'll see in a moment what I believe is the case, is we're starting to see other devices become even more accessible than they once were. And the real cornerstone of this would be Chromebook devices. They've actually started to eat up globally much of what the iPad space used to have in terms of educational stake. And the Chromebooks, this time around, 22% of the audience responded that they had access to those. And if you compare that to the previous time we ran this survey, it was about 13%. Now, this would really echo much of what I've noticed along the emails I get, the work that I do with teachers, where many of them are saying, hey, we've got Chromebooks now, what could we use these for? What can we do? And if you look back through our blog posts throughout this year, you've seen more of a focus around Chromebooks and Chrome devices, and that will continue based on the data. It's pretty apparent. Now, some of the other trends that we've noticed there, you know, in 2016, the computer lab, 33% of people had access to that. And if you compare that to the previous period of time, it was like 46% of people had access to computer labs. Now, what does that tell us? It tells us that many schools used to have those as the pinnacle of sort of tech in their school, and they've started to become fatigued and aged, and they've transitioned from those into more portable devices such as Chromebooks. And now, therefore, the PE departments, etc., have an opportunity to leverage them. Now, one thing that's not surprising is the small take up of Windows tablet devices. This time around, it's 3% of the audience, and Android tablets, about 6%. It's not surprising there. They're much more difficult. Well, Android is much more difficult to facilitate in a school with the management of multiple devices. And a Windows tablet, not the hottest selling item in terms of cost as well, compared to some of the other options that are around. So I think there's some interesting data there to come from the devices. And still, in my mind, the more mobile it is, the better. And that's definitely still coming through as a trend. Now, for the people that said that they did have access to iPads, they got to ask a supplementary question. And that question was, how many iPads do your students have access to during their PE class? both times we've done this, the number one question, the number one response here has been just my personal iPad. So about a quarter of the people who said they had access to iPads responded and said it's a personal iPad only. The next question again in both years was that they have access to a couple of iPads. So 22%, both times it's been 22%. And then the follow-on from that was that each student brings their own iPad, and that equated to around about 18% in 2014, and this time it's 15%. So we've seen a reduction in the amount of kids who are bringing their own iPads to a PE space. Now, the fourth option in this list was that we have a full class set. Now, this is something I see a lot, and comparing it to the previous time, the figure is virtually the same. So of those sorts of schools that are rolling out a class set, the figure really hasn't changed, and it's quite interesting. Now, we move into the next lot of questions, which aren't specifically about devices as such, but they're about maybe some of the underlying infrastructure around those devices. And the first question that we have is, does your gymnasium or indoor practical space have reliable Wi-Fi connection? Now, I use the word reliable as, you know, you can ensure that it's going to be there for you. It's not spotty. You don't have to stand in this special part in the room to get access. Now, in 2014, we saw that 78% of the people who responded had a reliable Wi-Fi connection, and therefore 22% didn't. This time around, we're at 82% with 18% of people who don't. Now, we've seen a growth. We've obviously even sampled more people this time around, and we've seen this upward trend of a lot of practical indoor spaces being or having Wi-Fi available. Now, the follow-on from this is, does your outdoor practical spaces have reliable Wi-Fi connection? Now, in my school, that's not the case. You know, you couldn't venture out far at all and be in a space where Wi-Fi wasn't present. Now, in 2014, 76% said that they did not have reliable Wi-Fi in outdoor spaces. And this time around, 79% of people said that they do not have reliable Wi-Fi in practical spaces, which is interesting. We've actually seen a reduction in the Wi-Fi that is available in some of these outdoor practical spaces. Now, this isn't obviously the exact science, different people responding in different years, but it is sort of indicative of some trends, and that one is sort of counter to what I would have expected to have taken place in the preceding last 2 years. Now, does your gymnasium or indoor practical space have some sort of projector or large screen display? Now, this is a really big thing that I've seen lots of schools implementing and working with. And in 2014, 63% of people said yes. This time around, 67% of people have said yes. They have some sort of projector or large display that's there. Now, I think the real important question here is the next part. Now, I've said, would you describe the projector that is available to you as fixed or permanent, semi-permanent in that it can be moved, or that it requires setup and pack up regularly? Now, from the previous time we asked this question, the number one response here was that it requires setup and pack up regularly. Half the people said that they have a projector, but they have to set it up and pack it up regularly. Obviously, that's less desirable. But this time around, 44% said that they had a fixed and permanent solution. Now, that's the thing that I advocate. Last time around, it was 37%. You're going to use it if it's there permanent and you can use it. You don't have to set it up and muck around with it. You're going to actually implement the different things that you can make possible with it. So we've seen more schools have get to that situation, which I think is a really big opportunity for schools who are looking to leverage tech. Now, a follow-on from this question was, does your outdoor practical spaces have some sort of projector or large screen display? This is really rare. The last time we ran this, only 2% of schools had access to some sort of permanent, you know, outdoor space projector display. And this time around, it's about 3%. So most people don't. In fact, the only cases I've ever seen this are in the rare exception of schools that have pretty much unlimited resources and can implement these, have a really strong sports culture outside of school to sort of justify the cost that it might have. And the question from here is, you know, would you describe the large screen display as permanent, or requiring setup or fixed and semi-permanent situation, and 45% said that it requires setup or pack up regularly. So they have the potential to have something outdoors, but it requires setup. And 25% of people said that they have a permanent fixed projector outside that they can access all the time. Compared that to last time when 17% of people had a fixed permanent outdoor projector, one that didn't require constant setup and so forth, which I think is quite interesting. Now, from here, we transition into questions about confidence related to technology. And again, it's really difficult to contrast different years and so on because we've got a different cohort of people answering. But in 2014, we had a scale of 0 to 10, with 10 being maximum confidence and 0 being not so confident. And the average was 7.31. So we had 7.31 of our people saying that they were really confident with utilizing tech in their classroom. Now, if we break that into further detail, last time around, about 12% of the audience said that they were 10. They were ultimately confident, and 1% said that they were not confident at all. Most of the data and the average was 7.31. Now, if we compare that to this time around, there are some interesting things to observe. There are 11% of people who rated themselves as 10. So a little bit less than last time. There is 1% of people who rated themselves as 1. So about the same as last time. But we've also noticed that there's now an increase in the number of people who sort of think about themselves in that 6, 7, 8 bracket than previously, which I think is good. That's the bulk of people. Now, the average is 7. So last time it was 7.3, this time it's 7. But we've seen a slight shift in the number of people who are rating themselves in that space of, feeling a little bit more confident than, say, a 5 or a 4. Now, the next series of questions that we asked was, how supportive are your colleagues regarding the use of tech in your PE program? This is pretty important. If you don't have supportive colleagues or a support network to help you or guide you or work with you, then you feel like you're on your own and you feel like you're less likely to make a change that could lead to improvements in many areas. And last time we did this, only 2% of people said that they had 0% support from, their department. And this is the same this time around. We've seen an improvement in the number of people who feel like they are supported, which I think is great. As many more people sort of become in tune with it and try things, the support networks grow there. And I think that's fantastic. So the average result here was 7.3 out of 10 in terms of how well supported they feel, up from 7 last time. And again, obviously we've had a bigger sample size, so that's quite good to know. Now, the following question to this was, how receptive to innovation and change are your colleagues regarding the use of tech in PE? Now, this can be quite a daunting thing. And if you're one of those people that is listening to this podcast, you're probably quite open to change and trying new things and seeing how they work. But there are others who maybe are not so. So that while they might be supportive of you trying things, they may not necessarily be so receptive to the change themselves. So in 2014, the average was 6.9 for how supported people were. And this time around, we're at 7.1. So we're starting to see more people receptive to it. And I guess that speaks to the work that lots of schools are doing around tech and a lot of great talented people in schools helping others in their department get some more progress and then therefore feel a little bit more comfortable about it and not so threatened. Now, I asked the question after this, how often do you use tech in your PE classroom? And sure, this is open for interpretation, but just what we were asking was, how often does it find its place? Whether it is something simple as you're picking teams using it, or you're doing something far more elaborate than that. I wasn't really sort of looking for a difference. Just how often does tech find its space into your practice? Now, the number one response here was about 38% use it multiple times per week. So not necessarily every single day or all the time, but just a few times throughout the week, it finds a place. That was the same the previous year, and the data was virtually identical. But if you move on to the next part, every single day, 22% of people said they use it every single day. Compare that with last time where we had 25%. Who use it every single day. And then the next one was three multiple times per month, 16%. And the previous time it was 16% also. But if we look at the very last group, which is surprising, I've never used technology in PE, we've got 1% of people. And again, last time we did it, we had 1%. Once or twice per year, 1%. Previous time we did it, we had 2%. So if I'm gathering anything from this, some of the stuff is that people are a little bit more open to trying some things. And the average sort of time is that it's just a multiple times per week. I think that's good. I mean, there's no real reason why it has to be in every single lesson. It just needs to fit the theme of what you're doing and be of benefit. And that is, you know, sort of testament to multiple times per week model. Now, we added a question in here, which was, in what areas do you like technology assisting you with? Now, this wasn't something that we had asked previously, so we don't have any data around this, but we asked, what are the things that you value most about it, essentially? And we had assessment as the number one thing that people valued, in that 82% of people put this down. Now, they could tick as many things as they wanted, but of all the people who responded, 82% of those people had this down as least one of their options. The second one was instruction. And then we had measurement and data capture, which would be things like tracking heart rates and, you know, measurements of different fitness tests, whatever it may be. Student physical activity, so people who use tech to increase physical activity. Video feedback, they're all 73%. Communication was 55%. Reflection was 50%. Collaboration was 49%. So about half the people who responded said that that was something that they valued for. And then there was portfolio curation, and only 31% of people said that they valued tech for that purpose, which probably speaks more to the fact that not many schools really have this idea of ongoing portfolio style documentation of what people are achieving, rather than that technology isn't useful for that, because the people that are using it for portfolio curation probably really are finding it to be such a powerful tool. Now, assessment is the number one reason from this list of why people use or value tech. So in the upcoming year, we're going to be doing quite a lot of work around different ways that you can use tech for assessment purposes. Now, back to the results that we had in the previous year, how willing are you to work towards improving your use of meaningful tech in phys ed? Now, this question here is interesting, because if they're on the PE Geek email list, which are the people that responded, they're probably very much likely to be involved in wanting to improve themselves, and that sort of shines through in the data. So last time we did it, 9.23 was the average. If zero was, I don't want to do any work to improve myself, and 10 was the most, then the average was 9.23. And this time around, it was exactly the same, 9.22, which I think is great. It means that people are open just to even trying things, so they can have better understanding of how it works and then make a decision whether it finds a way into their practice. Now, of the things that you could potentially take away, what issues do you or your school face with adding tech to your PE classroom? 58% of people said money or funding, and that's up from last time around, where it was 54% of people said that. Loss of activity time, 15% of people say that's the culprit. That's down from 16% last time, which I think is good. There are a number of ways that tech can be the opposite of what we think around activity. Access to training, 9% of people said that, and 11% said it previously. So hopefully our role helps with these things. 6% of people last time said no issues, they don't have any at all, and 5% this time said they have no issues. Technology breaking, 5% of people said that. They, you know, worried about the tech that breaks. And that was 4% last time. Lack of admin support was 4%, and last time it was 5%. So a little bit of a change there. Now, if we move on to the next question, this is purely for me as well, but you might find it interesting because you may have found it a different way, but how did you discover the PE Geek website? The number one option in 2014 was Twitter. in that 30% of people had found the website through Twitter and obviously connected with it. Second was Google search. This time around, they flipped. 26% of people found it through a Google search, and this 20% of people found it through Twitter. Now, I would say many of the reasons behind that is that Twitter is certainly changing how its algorithm works so that less people get seen and therefore less people can be discovered unless you pay to be promoted in those platforms. So they're definitely moved to more of a pay-to-play type scenario. The third option was I attended your workshop, and that's up from the previous time around where about 13% of people. Now, obviously, that's a good thing because we've 2 years down the track, more people have been to the workshops and probably discovered us from there. Now, the next question was, how long have you followed the website? Again, this is really interesting for us, but for you, it might put, you know, yours into context too. And the number one question is about the last time we ran it was about 6 to 12 months. 27% of the audience had followed for that long. Now, assuming that those people enjoyed it, they've now flowed into the next bracket, which is about 2 years. And that's the number one from this time around. And the second is 6 to 12 months. And then a third, we had 3 to 6 month range. And that's all exactly the same as the previous time that we did the data, just with a minor shift at the top. There, last time we did it, there were 1% of the audience who have been following for 5 years plus. And this time around, there actually are 5% of the people who responded that have followed for 5 years plus. And that's pretty much the entirety of the time that we've spent curating the website, which I think is really quite cool. Now that brings us to the end of the analysis of the results from the recent audit. Now, I did mention, obviously, this isn't a scientific study. There's no way to track the cohorts and see how each of those have changed from year to year, but it does give us a bit of an overview and an opportunity to discuss some of the results that have appeared. There are a couple of trends, though, that I've observed, and one of them is that schools seem to be investing more so in infrastructure that is supportive to the use of tech, such as Wi-Fi and large screens. That would absolutely be one of the things that I'd take away, and it's something that I have seen and observed quite readily over the last few years. The other thing that I would observe is the role that Chromebooks are starting to have in a phys ed space. Now, there's a couple of reasons behind that. They're really affordable. They are quite portable. They have great battery lives. They're cloud connected. And all of these different facets are starting to roll together into becoming the default choice for many situations. So we, as the website here, are definitely putting in more work behind developing tools for those, as well as different software that you can use in your PE practice around the Chrome space. Now, there are obviously other things that we'll pick up and observe throughout the period coming along. If you want to get a deeper look at this data, then you can head along to thepegeek.com/results, where you can have a look at these results yourselves and print out a copy and do whatever you like. Hopefully, it's been useful for you. I look forward to returning in 2017 with some more material for you, and hopefully we can answer some of the questions that have appeared as part of this audit. Speak soon.